Okay, with our split show tonight, Dr. Peter Bragan with us this hour. We will take your phone calls as we talk about his work, of course, psychiatric drug withdrawal. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Peter Bragan with us. Peter, some people may have a prescription of some of these mood-altering drugs, and they give them away to people or to kids. That's crazy itself, isn't it?
Well, it's crazy itself, but it's not so different from what happens if you go to your psychiatrist. He just gives them away to you, too. Free samples. You know, the sad thing is that the professionals are behaving like drug dealers now. They're behaving with not much more sense than, you know, the relative who says, take some of my Xanax. We've become so, the pharmaceutical industry in collaboration with the government, because the government's very involved in this, and in collaboration with my profession of psychiatry, has really sold people the idea that these drugs are safe and effective. And so people are trading them, and kids are taking bunches of them in high school. It's a very, very bad situation.
What are the pills primarily that they're taking, Peter?
Well, you mean taking them, not given to each other, you mean?
Yeah. What are they sharing here?
Well, the addictive drugs, the stimulants we give to children, are bought and sold. They're among the most stolen drugs because they're among the most addictive. And by the way, George, children who take stimulant drugs for ADHD become more likely to use cocaine when they become young adults because these drugs change your brain. They create a craving. Another group that's used very widely, again, addictive, are the benzos, you know, like Xanax and Valium and Klonopin and Ativan. And the stimulant drugs, I didn't name them, they include the Ritalin-like drugs. You know, methylphenidate is very similar to cocaine. And of course, Adderall and drugs like that, which are amphetamines. So we're giving people drugs which are routinely traded on the streets. But I think many psychiatric drugs now, people have gotten so used to them that they're even playing with some of the other more, less pleasurable drugs, like the antipsychotic drugs.
Strange stuff. Let's go to some phone calls here, Peter. This hour's going to fly by. David, Thousand Oaks, California. You'll be the first. Go ahead, David. Thanks for calling.
Oh, no problem. I was listening in, and he has a great point about how all of the younger kids are taking Ritalin and benzodiazepines, because when I was in high school, a whole bunch of kids would just be hooked on the benzos, just loved them. They would almost go crazy when they didn't have them. And also the younger generation, even younger than that, I mean, if you go to a doctor nowadays, he will tell you, even if you don't have it, that you do have some form of attention deficit, and will hook little kids up on high doses of Ritalin, Adderall, and things of that nature, just so that they can pay attention in school instead of having the parents just, you know, cut them off from video games, things of that nature. So I don't think there's really any reason for doctors to be giving these kids high doses of attention deficit pills. And they're just doing it for money.
Would you agree with this, Peter?
Yeah, I think it's a travesty to give, in effect, performance pills that would get you kicked out of the Olympics to children so that they can focus better on their studies. All the drugs can do is impair function. And the way the Ritalin-like drugs, the Adderall, the amphetamine-like drugs work in kids is they do two things. They narrow focus. You don't anymore have your fantasy life interfering. You're not thinking about your social life. You're not imagining being a poet or imagining being an athlete. You're actually diminished in your spontaneous imaginative capacity, and your behaviors diminish as a result. The other thing it does is it enforces obsessive behaviors. You see the same thing in chimpanzees. So this is just a direct effect on the biology of primates. So we're impairing our children to make them fit better into our homes instead of learning to discipline them, and into our schools instead of really inspiring them with education.
Do most doctors know how to withdraw people from these kinds of drugs?
No, not at all. I mean, it's a major reason for writing psychiatric drug withdrawal. is that the doctors don't know, the therapists don't know, the families don't know, and the patients don't know. Psychiatrists in particular have led the way with you're supposed to take this for the rest of your life. And it's very strange because what happens is you'll see somebody getting worse and worse on a drug, and then they go to another psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist asks, well, what have you been taking? Well, I've been taking Celexa. Okay, we'll keep you on that. And not looking back and seeing, well, when this person first went to a doctor, they were a little anxious. Now we're calling them bipolar. We made them crazy with our drugs. So they're not even thinking about drug withdrawal. And a lot of doctors, a lot of prescribers get mad and angry and feel disempowered when people come and say, I want to come off the drugs. So I want to encourage my colleagues to think differently. I want to encourage prescribers like psychiatrists and internists and pediatricians and nurse practitioners and so on to think in a new way about these drugs, to involve their patients and their families in the discussions, to take seriously when the patients and the families or the therapist talks about, you know, adverse effects. You've got to get the, in this information age, you got to realize as a physician that your patient and the family may know more about that particular drug that the patient is on because they've spent 10 hours online about it. And the last thing you ever did was 3 months ago, you checked some three-line item in your computer program about the drug. So, you know, people got to realize this information is out there. It's in my books. It's on the web. And really get alert to the dangers and the risks associated with the drugs. One last thought about professionals,
yeah.
Because I hope there's like, you know, hundreds and thousands of therapists listening to this show. You know, there's an awful lot of them out there. Therapists, counselors, psychologists, social workers, stop just pushing the drugs on the patients because they've been prescribed. Use your own judgment. You get online, you read my book, read other books, find out about the drugs. It's really what's going to turn this around is not going to come from the psychiatrist like me. It's going to come from the public and also from therapists deciding that they're going to learn about the drugs and not just blindly take them. That's the change we need in our society.
Okay, let's go to the area of Lake Jackson, Texas. It's Melisandre with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there, Mel. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm 26 years old. I've been on psych meds for 20 years of my life, actually. And originally, I was a fairly stable child. I was high energy, very high energy, but stable. And I had some traumatic experiences psychologically, so. And as a result, my mom had to give up custody of me and put me in state's care. I was put in Austin State Hospital. At the time, I lived in Austin. And they put me on Ritalin. And from there, it's just been down to a spot.
Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Get back to your phone.
I've just been on Ritalin. I've been put on, and that, I think, destabilized me.
Okay, yep, can't understand. Did you pick up some of that, though, Peter, to help her?
Yeah. You're taking Ritalin, mood stabilizer. Do you have a question?
She's gone, Peter. Go.
Oh, she's gone. Well, listen, this is a typical story. 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, they're having a problem at home. Maybe they're disobedient. The parents haven't gotten a good plan formulated for raising them, or their parents are in conflict. Or they're doing fine at home. They go to school. The teacher thinks they could do better on a drug. Child ends up on a stimulant. The stimulant makes it hard to sleep, so then comes a sleeping med. Now the child starts to get a little unstable. Then comes what she was saying, a mood stabilizer. And by the time I get to see this child, the child's on 5 psychiatric drugs, and I look at mom and dad, and I say, let's remember where this began. What was the child like at age 6? And then maybe one of them will start crying. Oh, my God. I just remembered what a sense of humor this little boy had, or this little girl. They were so full of life and intelligence, and oh, my God. We've just gotten used to the idea that our kid is mentally ill and is like a zombie. And then the changes will begin. I would suggest to this 26-year-old caller that if she wants to come off meds, she's been on them since a child, she needs to take a lot of time and do it very, gradually.
Yes, but you can't do it yourself, can you?
Not under those kind of conditions.
No.
I mean, some people do it. Some people do everything and get away with it. I strongly advise against it. And, you know, my book is, you could take my book to a prescriber and say, let's look at this together, or to your therapist, say, let's look at this together in your family, and how can we begin to come off the drugs? But you're doing, if you've been on the drugs that long, you need to come off real slow. And by real slow, I mean, it's probably going to take you more than a year or more to slowly get off the drugs because you grew up on them.
Let's go next to Ian in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Ian.
Hi. I would just like to ask the doctor, because this is a growing problem in my generation. I'm 25 years old. What he really thinks of the methadone and Suboxone treatment programs, because there's a lot of people growing on such.
Well, you know, I don't think the way to come off of an opiate is to take some other opiate or opiate-like drug in order to do it. Nor do I think the way to come off is to take psychiatric drugs. The way to do it is to come off the opiates in a managed, carefully managed manner. And there's lots of good withdrawal programs, and it should accompany with good withdrawal programs for the opiates. I think it's a big mistake to be taking, substituting a lot of these new pain medications for the opiates. The opiates, they're good short-term pain management, but like all drugs, after a while, they're doing more harm than good. So you want to come off them slowly with a support system. AA can be a terrific help, and I'd like to see more people setting up 12-step programs for psych drugs. That's something people can do. You can set up 12-step programs and help people with that marvelous program, you know, help each other come off psych drugs.
Peter, do these drugs do anything to your serotonin levels?
Well, many of the drugs do. And, of course, almost all the new antidepressants are famous for supposedly blocking the removal of serotonin from the brain, so that you flood the brain with serotonin. Well, why would you want to do that? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Take a drug that's going to give you a serious biochemical imbalance by impeding the removal of serotonin. But I said supposedly because even the brain has got more sense than that, and the brain fights back. And while you're trying, well, the drugs are flooding the brain with serotonin, the brain's fighting back and is stopping the production of serotonin, becoming insensitive to serotonin. The brain doesn't like the drugs. But yes, there are a lot of drugs that are influencing serotonin, and serotonin goes throughout the brain. When you take Effexor or Prozac or Celexa or Paxil, you're influencing your overall brain function because serotonin nerves go throughout the brain. You're also influencing your gut because the serotonin in your gut. You're influencing your blood because the serotonin in your bloodstream. So, I mean, it's just foolhardy to think you're going in there and throwing some little switch that's going to fix depression or fix anxiety. What you're actually doing is mucking about in a very complex, poorly understood, incredible organ called the brain.
Okay, we go next to Christine in Portland, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hi, Christine, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome.
My question is there anything I can do to get better? I stopped taking Adderall and Xanax after being prescribed it for 8 years as an adult, and I just stopped cold turkey. And I have not been able to do anything, get off the couch, lead any kind of productive life. Even my bathing habits are horrible. I mean, it's just completely devastated me. And I've heard on the internet that some people suffer for 2 years on the couch before they can get up again. Is there anything I can do to help myself to get better sooner?
Very good call. How long have you been off these drugs? You were on 8 years, and you've been off how long now?
About a year and a half, and I still am not able to do anything.
What kind of symptoms, other than just, you know, this horrible one of not being able to do anything, what are you feeling? I mean, are you getting muscle cramps or pains, or you're
No, nothing like that.
No headaches or anything like that?
Very just so lethargic. My brain will not allow me to get up and do stuff. It's like there's a major
I think the most important thing you could do would be to, in effect, get a life coach, either a therapist. You got to be careful with both therapists and life coaches because they come in all varieties, skills and lack of skills. But maybe find somebody who could really work with you on getting your strength back. You want to start eating as well as you can. You want to give up all the other psychoactive substances, alcohol and cigarettes. You exercise, eat well, and get some friends involved. Do you have any friends that you could just call on the phone and say, drag me off the couch?
No, I don't. My family's been really cool about it.
Tell your family to really start pushing you and encouraging you and getting you out and doing things. And it can be incredibly important to, even though it's what you have is a physical disability, to work on your spiritual state. I work with people who have been badly injured by the drugs, who have physical, neurological manifestations, but with a new spiritual enthusiasm for life, they can actually turn their lives around because we are more than our brains. We really are more than that.
Are these billion-dollar industries, Peter?
Oh, my God, yes. They're such billion-dollar industries that we've been having a series of fines levied against some of the biggest drug companies in the billions of dollars, and they hardly blink. They just go on doing their stuff. So these are multi-billion-dollar industries.
And the fines are done on purpose, aren't they?
Well, you know,
they're all in cahoots with each other.
You know, in a way, yes. I think it's like we'll fine you just so much that we can take a lot of money into our coffers.
It's profit. It's profit sharing.
We won't kill you.
Yeah, it's profit sharing. And the government says, we'll approve this lousy drug for you. You go and make billions on it, and then we're going to fine you, but we'll get our cut.
We'll get our cut, and we won't stop you from giving out these drugs. And we won't take back anywhere near what you made on them. And a lot of these companies, they have been pushing these drugs for children, like Risperdal, which is, being taken by so many kids. A lot of these antipsychotic drugs have been pushed off-label, that is, not according to the rules of the FDA, for children. And they've gotten fined, and they just come out fabulously. In fact, after the last series of fines, some of these drug companies, their stocks went up because they breathed a sigh of relief. There was only a billion.
Where do we get your book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal?
You can get the book from my website if you want, which is Breggin.com, Breggin.com, Breggin.com. You can also get it very easily on Amazon.com.
Simple enough. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, Peter, in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And those of you who need to email me, safe and simple, George, at coasttocoastam.com. Well, next hour, we're talking about happiness, deep happy, with Peter Fairfield on Coast to Coast AM. And when we come back in just a moment, we'll take final phone calls with Dr. Peter Bragan as we talk about psychiatric drug withdrawal on Coast to Coast AM. Peter, before we take final calls, what's the one message you want people to be able to take tonight listening to you?
Well, life is tough. Life is difficult. Some of us have had horrible childhoods, but even those of us with good ones will find that it's not easy to be a human being. And being a human being should be a very creative process where you're using your brain, whether you think it's given to you by God or evolution, where you're using your brain to express you, your soul, your spirit, your identity, your personality, and that any help you get should treat you as a treasure, not as a machine to be tampered with. And the help you get should want you to protect your brain from toxic substances, not put toxic substances in your brain. So look for someone when you're seeking help who really wants to empower you, who believes you can take charge of your life, you can take responsibility for your life, you can live a good and satisfying life, and also that you can take your most painful emotions, And instead of stuffing them with drugs, let them out in a therapy and understand the emotions, understand the pain, come to grips with it, and grow from it. We can grow from our passions, including our suffering. And that is the way I think that all wise people for thousands of years have told us to go, and go toward living by your best principles and your highest ideals. And that's not the drug route. It's not the diagnosis route.
Okay, to the phones we go now. Santa Barbara, California, Ray's turn. Ray, go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Yes. Peter, I have seemed to learn something in life that, you know, all these pharmaceutical industries, they only seem to constantly want to treat the effect of some disease or malady or whatever. And they never seem to understand, they never get it, that the cause, you know, in the line of cause and effect, you know, that they just don't get it. You know, that you have to get to the cause. And I want to say that I have a little example that I've been, and I agree with everything that you said tonight. I think you were really spot on many things. And, you know, I think a lot of times it's up to the spiritual world to really help people, because these pharmaceuticals, they're just too greedy. They don't care. So I know a lady that suffered from migraine headaches for her life, tremendous migraine headaches in her life. I introduced her to a form of a Buddhist practice that was part meditation and part chanting. And she started this practice, and in 2 months, all the migraines ceased, were gone. And she was so thankful, and she still uses this practice that she's never had any headaches at all, gone. And, you know, it seems to me, why don't these pharmaceutical people, why don't they, you know, understand that there's a spiritual side to human nature? Why don't, you know, where do you go for that? You know, I mean, I have a, you know, a place.
What do you do with it, Peter?
Well, first of all, the pharmaceutical industry is actually a materialistic industry, and it's anti-spiritual. It wants you to believe, and this is fake, that you have a biochemical imbalance. So it isn't going to sell anything but that very narrow fake materialism. But I'm with you 100%. You know, the alternative to psychiatric drugs is not psychotherapy necessarily, certainly not necessarily Peter Bregan's psychotherapy. The alternative to psychiatric drugs is all of life, all the spiritual alternatives, all the moral alternatives, all the educational and religious alternatives. And at the root of it is a human being who takes charge of his or her own life and finds the directions and alternatives and healing methods that they need in their lives. And in general, if you're doing psychiatric drugs, very little of that's going to happen. So the real alternative to drugs is all of life. And I'm glad to hear about a Buddhist alternative. There are many approaches to living a good life.
Let's go to William, Chicago, Illinois. Hey, William, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good evening, guys. Real quick, life by definition is stressful, so drugs are not the solution. But here's a real quick story. My son, years ago, a teacher came up to me and said, your son is ADD and he needs to go see a psychologist, and recommended one. I went there. 5 minutes later, yay, he's ADD, okay? And the red flag went right up. I went to a psychiatrist, a child psychiatrist now, a real doctor. Doctor spent 2 hours looking at him, said, your son is totally normal. Nothing wrong with him. I took the report, I threw it right in the principal's lap, and I said, look, what's going on here? I dug deeper and deeper and deeper. Now, I'm telling you this, God's honest truth. Schools get kickbacks from the pharmaceutical companies when they get a kid to be on drugs. I swear to you, George, you could do a whole show on it, look into it. I'm telling you the truth. It's a racket. It is a racket across the country.
You know what? That would not surprise me. Years ago, Peter, as you know, they used to do the same with doctors, did they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Been some clamping down on that now. But doctors are getting huge kickbacks from the drug companies. They get these lavish trips. They get, depending on how much of the drug they're selling, they get expensive dinners. They get theater tickets. They get basketball, you know, game tickets to the Celtics that nobody else can get. So this is a huge system of money greasing this system. There's no doubt about it.
Do the pharmaceutical marketing people know that Dr. X is the highest seller in this particular city, for example?
Oh, they not only know it, they talk about it, and they talk about how to woo him and how to get him to woo other doctors.
And to train them?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They got all the visits recorded, and, you know, they track the whole process. They track so carefully that none of them ever come to my office.
Doesn't the, you know, the agency, the Food and Drug Administration, doesn't it monitor via computer how many prescriptions a particular doctor writes and check on them?
Not that I'm aware of. The only monitoring like that I know that I have any awareness of is in regard to the drugs that are considered addictive and like Valium and like Ritalin. There is some record keeping of that and some cracking down on doctors who do that. There's very little in regard to other drugs. Now, in places like Florida, where the state legislature's gotten interested, and I've worked a little bit with some of the legislators down there, they have really been looking into things like the massive drugging of our kids in foster homes, and a lot of that is a few docs doing massive drugging. But there is no big system that watches over this, although the data is available, I think, to the DEA for the drugs that are called scheduled drugs.
Let's go to Mike, Toronto, Canada. Hey, Mike, International Line, go ahead.
Hey, hi, George. Peter, Dr. Peter, my wife's late 50s. She was an alcoholic for up to 5 years ago, and she was taking Ativan.
Ativan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still continue to take Ativan. Now, on top of that, her GP added some Adderall, and that was to help her focus.
Yeah.
And every time she'd run out of that in a week, she'd turn into months as the scream. So, consequently, she managed to set up a thing with the doctor, and now we've got a pharmacist giving her these pills once every 2 days, and she's trying to do a diminishing amount of Ativan.
So you're weaning her off this stuff?
But the Adderall, she's lost 30, 40 pounds. She hardly eats. She is just a different person. She doesn't think right.
No.
What the hell is the difference? Why are you taking Ativan and Adderall together?
Well, what happened to your wife is that instead of her becoming clean and sober by giving up alcohol, is that a doctor enabled her to take alcohol in a pill. Ativan is virtually alcohol in a pill, affects very similar neurotransmitters, has very similar effects. Most alcoholics will happily use the benzos instead. The combination, though, is very, very dangerous, can be lethal. And when you get all sedated on the benzos, then the doc starts giving you the stimulants. So you get the stimulants to get you going and the benzos to turn you down, and your life becomes tinkering with drugs instead of taking over your life and running it. And this is happening to millions of Americans who have gotten into the idea that they're going to tinker with their drugs one way or another, and they don't pay any more attention to their husbands or their wives or their children or to changing their lives or growing or going back to school or finding a spiritual solution. They just tinker with their drugs. It's a horrible lifestyle.
Josie in Richmond, Virginia is now up. Go ahead, Josie.
Hi. Salutations to you. I'm calling because of two things. One is people who have bipolar problems, they have to take lithium. Is lithium in the orotate form, since I'm a real holistic person, something that I could advise people on, that it's a more natural and more benefit to the body to take it that way in an orotate form? And then a second question I had was this wonderful book called Marijuana, Gateway to Health, and being forgetful, Alzheimer's, other problems like that, cancers.
Virginia, you just missed our program a few weeks ago where we talked exactly about that. Peter?
If you're taking a drug in sufficient quantities to influence you psychoactively, it's harming you. Now, if you manage to get enough lithium into your system one way or another that it's giving you a blood level, you have a toxic substance in your blood. So It's just a matter of how much you've taken and whether it's affecting your blood level. The answer to life does not lie in psychoactive substances. It really doesn't. I think that the body needs nutrition, the brain needs basic nutrition, needs exercise, needs rest. It needs the basic things we've always known it needs. But you can't really improve your quality of life with psychoactive substances. I don't believe it's possible because the brain is so delicate, so complex, so beyond comprehension that pouring any kind of substance into the brain, getting it through the blood-brain barrier into the brain in the long run is not going to be beneficial.
Okay, back to British Columbia, Canada. Hey, Laura, take it away.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Laura. Fine.
Thank you. I just have a question, Peter Brigham. My psychotherapist totally introduced me to you, and it was very, very helpful after she heard my horror story of psychiatry. I was in it for about 3 years, and several suicide attempts. It did not work for me. Eventually, I became non-compliant when I realized that it was actually the drugs that were altering my behavior, ruining my life, and, you know, possibly leading me to death. So I became non-compliant and in the hospital went cold turkey off of all of my medications. And I don't know how I did it, but it was like 3 weeks of torture completely with no help whatsoever. And it was really distressful. The psychiatrist was completely unhelpful during this time. After 2 weeks, she told me I should have been better, even though I was on about, I don't know, six different medications at the time. And I'm just wondering, after I came off, I had to go back on the one, like a benzodiazepine, Klonopin, because that was the only one that I couldn't stop. For some reason, my foot got like serious nerve damage, and I'm wondering if that's from the benzodiazepine, because I talked to a doctor about it, and he said that it wouldn't be from that. So I'm just completely confused about that. So,
any input here, Peter?
Well, if you have like a peripheral neuropathy where you or some abnormal feelings in your foot.
Gone away. The thing is, it's gone away. It's just that he denied the fact, and I was wondering why, because so many doctors said, "Oh no, there's no way you should be feeling bad," but I was feeling horrible, like it was like torturous.
Well, but it's not in the scientific literature, but I have seen several patients now who, for months and months after coming off the benzos, had terrible pain in their feet and couldn't hardly stand and wear shoes. So I've actually heard of pain in the feet from benzos. But I think, you know, when you end up on multiple psychiatric drugs, goodness knows what they're doing to the nervous system. We don't have any studies, scientific studies, of what happens to people on multiple psychiatric drugs. The FDA, when they approve a drug, is one drug. You're not taking any other drug.
Peter, do these drugs work for anybody? I mean, like I said, I got emails earlier from people who were a little upset about tonight.
Well, I think it depends on what you mean by help. I mean, you could ask the same question about drinking alcohol. You know, I think it helps me once in a while to have a beer in the evening and relaxes me, and I think I go to sleep more easily, but then I realize I wake up in 4 hours and I'm a little edgy. Does it help? It depends on what you mean by help. Certainly, a lot of people take drugs that numb them sufficiently to make them feel they're being helped. But I don't think that's the kind of help that we should be encouraging people to get. I think we should be encouraging people to use their marvelous brains to figure out what they want out of life, to strive to get what they want, to become more loving. You can go to 20 psychiatrists and not have one of them say, well, you know, you're a source of love. Let's work on your finding your power to glow with love, because it will change your life and everybody else's life around you. I mean, the mental health professions are not dealing with really what life is about. And so the drugs seem okay or helpful because people get the idea that being a little less is better. And I think that's all the drugs can do, George. I don't think they can elevate the human spirit.
Okay, next up we go to Jeff in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Jeff, thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I've been on a number of medications for quite a number of years. I'm in the process of stepping down from one right now. It's like one and a half for a week, and then one for a week, and half for a week, and then off. And basically, I suffer from severe depression and real bad stress and anxiety. And I find that if I can manage to stay away from triggers, then I can deal with the anxiety and the stress with what I'm taking. As far as the depression part of it's concerned, most of the time it works, but not always. I do find that I have a lack of ambition a lot of times, I just don't know what I can do about that.
Well, most psychiatric drugs will dampen ambition. Just drinking regularly will dampen ambition. Particularly smoking marijuana will dampen ambition. And most psychiatric drugs will do that because it's dampening your frontal lobe function. And ambition and foresight and being excited about the world in the future requires really high-functioning frontal lobes. But I would encourage you to think about just looking at depression. That if you are getting really depressed, you want to die, you want to hurt yourself, you can't get out of bed, think about the strength of that emotion because you have that equivalent passion for life inside you. It's not like we have no passion at all and get depressed. We get depressed because we're not fulfilling our life passions, our vigor, our joy, our creativity. So when people tell me they're horribly depressed, I tell them that means you're horribly alive and it's just very painful for you right now. So see if you can find somebody who's willing to go into your depression with you enough to see what the other side of it is. What do you want that you're not getting? What have you lost that you don't think you can recover? What's stopping you from being ambition? That's a part of a human being is to want a lot out of life.
Peter, always thank you for the information. Psychiatric drug withdrawal by Dr. Peter Bragan. Up next, we will be talking to another Peter Fairfield, about his work, Deep Happy, Happiness, next on Coast to Coast AM.